The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Okay, we're recording. We're back. I'm Brent.
I'm Lydia.
And our working title. We may have had one, but it's been a month or so since we've recorded the last episode because life. But working title: Brent and Lydia talk Starman. Yeah. So we just finished reading issue number one. But I hear you have some interesting history about the world of November 1994 and the yesteryear.
I sure do. Well, actually, in November 1994, there wasn't a lot of stuff happening, except, you know, issue one of Starman.
Yeah.
I just went online to look at the birthdays that happened in November 1984, hoping to see, you know, lots of famous people, but no, there were not a lot of extremely famous people, because they're all like 22 years old. However, the only one that I actually got a little bit excited about was Dakota Fanning.
Oh, she was born?
Yes, she was born in November, she was born in February, so...
Oh, well, that doesn't count.
But November 1994, a lot of YouTube stars were born.
See, I'm still not used to the idea that there are stars of YouTube.
I know, right?
And I know you're a YouTuber, and I think that's great, but it's still like, wait, there's stars of YouTube? That's... Wow.
I had to get very educated before I embraced this whole, you know, culture of YouTube, because it's just a different sort of entertainment. But that's the amazing thing about, you know, the internet, and that's what we are doing right now over the internet. And I'm going to like do this great segue into into another thing that happened in November 1994, which is, there was this conference in San Francisco. I'm just going to call up Wikipedia and read off there. There's this thing in San Francisco which was devoted to the commercial potential of the World Wide Web. So I think people just came and had this very important meeting to talk about whether the internet can make money. And okay, these are the featured speakers included Mark Anderson of Netscape. Netscape. Oh my! Did you have a Netscape browser?
I'm pretty sure I did. I haven't even thought of Netscape in at least a decade.
I had a Netscape browser as well. I have been a heavy user of the internet since I was 9. Well, that's 2 decades and a year. Internet! On YouTube, we call ourselves like Team Internet, so whenever a digital talent or someone who is active mainly on the internet, you know, YouTube stars, they get some sort of recognition, we always say, "Go Team Internet," because we are so proud of being part of that community. So, yeah, that's what happened in November.
It's weird to think that you've been using the internet since you were 9, because I mean, our ages, they're not so different. I'm a little bit older. But we were so rare in that, you know, I grew up with a computer in the house, like even early elementary school, like 7 or 8, using, you know,
MS-DOS and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, even getting on the World Wide Web wasn't really a common thing, I think, until I was in junior high school.
Oh,
maybe in like fifth grade, early junior high school is when you could use BBSs to kind of get to the internet, but
yeah.
Nine.
Yeah, I was nine. I remember very clearly that my parents and I, we would play this game, this I think it must have, it was one of those games where a door would open and there would be like a German shepherd that would come at your throat. You shoot at it.
Oh, that's probably Wolfenstein.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's the name, Wolfenstein?
Wolfenstein 3D was one of, like, a first-person shooter.
Yeah. And then it would downgrade or upgrade your weapon according to the ammo that you found or something.
Yeah, you could get different guns and different things, and eventually you fought Robot Hitler, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I never got to that stage.
One of the forerunners of, like, Doom.
Oh. Okay, I have heard. But that's what happened in November. The World Wide Web was scrutinized for its commercial potential. And look where we are now.
Yay. I saw a few interesting things in November, if you don't mind if I add a little bit.
Yeah.
First off, George Foreman. He won the he won the heavyweight championship in boxing, which made him the oldest heavyweight in history.
And does it have anything to do with the Foreman grill?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, George Foreman, I'm not sure if he designed it or if he just put his name on it, but he's definitely the spokesperson for the Foreman grills.
Okay.
And some other things. The first passengers traveled through the Channel Tunnel that connects the UK and France.
Oh.
And if you've ever heard of a guy, I believe his name is George W. Bush, was elected governor of Texas. So
congratulations.
Thanks, November 94. The Milwaukee Cannibal, Jeffrey Dahmer, was beaten to death by a fellow inmate at the prison where he was incarcerated. Strangely enough, when this happened, I remember when this happened, and like a few years before this, do you remember the movie Demolition Man, starring Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes?
I think so.
It's a movie that takes place in, you know, the not too distant future. But one of the points of it is Wesley Snipes was going to unfreeze other criminals, and one of the names he mentions is Jeffrey Dahmer. So I remember like thinking like, huh, I wonder if later on if they're just gonna delete that portion because well, it's in the future, and if he's dead, he can't be.
Mm.
But I don't think they bothered. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those were just some of the interesting stuff I saw.
I see. Oh, that's actually interesting for me too. Even though action movies from 1994 weren't really my thing.
Oh, you should see Demolition Man. It's great, but not as great, of course, as Starman, issue number one.
Yay! Amazing segue!
I love it! This, of course, written by James Robinson, with pencils by Tony Harris, and the inker, Wade Von Grobiger, which I'm still not sure if I'm saying right.
Grobiger. It's spelled Graw and badger. So
I wonder if that means anything, like a growing badger. And letterer John Workman, who is a pretty well known, all these people are pretty well known and well renowned in their fields. So I have a synopsis that I wrote out, so hopefully I'll be able to read through it without messing up too many words.
Okay,
so this is basically the overview of issue number one.
Okay.
A shadowy man writes in his journal as Opal City is under attack by the forces of the Mist. Nightly news is abuzz with theories and speculations about the attacks and the death of Starman. Dun dun dun. Jack is reunited with his father, who is currently in a hospital under the guard of the O'Dares.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than celebrate, they just pour on more pain. Jack leaves the room and runs into Hope O'Dare, and they trade some family histories, and she tries to get the point across to him that family means something, and that there's a connection between the O'Dares and the Knights. Mm-hmm. But this is broken up by a phone call from the Mist, and the city of Opal is on fire! Jack is sent away for his own safety with an older gravity rod, not to be confused with a cosmic rod.
Mm-hmm.
But Jack feels the tug to action as he gets involved fighting the good fight. He does okay, but he does get winged during his getaway. Mm-hmm. Once again, the Son of the Mist thinks he killed Jack. But did he? Maybe, as we switch scenes to see the shadowy, shadowy man interrupt a museum robbery most violently. He uh-huh. wonders about good versus evil, and he takes his reward. And then, on the last page, we cut to Jack deciding to go back into Opal. Mm.
Continued next issue.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That was great.
I like the sound effects you added. I loved it. It got me into it.
I had a flashback to one of those, you know, back in the 50s or something, they would have these radio plays.
Flashback to back in the 50s.
I mean, a flashback to footage that I saw of.
Nope. Your secret's out. Your secret's out. She is immortal. She has inside her blood of kings.
Yeah, I'm like that guy the spoiler alert, I don't age. I don't know where. I think that's the next issue.
Yes, it is. It is. So that's a preview. A preview.
Okay. No spoilers. Preview.
Yeah, but here we do have our first appearance in Starman by the Shade.
Mm-hmm. I don't age. I'm sorry.
We're just going to have to edit that into our next episode. That's it.
I'm sorry. That's so funny.
So what do you think of from just, well, I guess this issue and kind of the next issue, but what do you think of the Shade so far?
I think he's really cool. I shouldn't be saying this about a bad guy, but he's really, I like this kind of villain. Because he just seems very smart and very mm-hmm. collected, you know, mm-hmm. the way his lines are set in the story, I really like it. Like the way he calls the guys who are moving the stuff from the museum plebeians, and he's just this aristocratic supervillain.
Yes.
I like it.
I'm really glad you feel that way, because, you know, the Shade's one of those characters that, it's hard to read stuff that came out before this that uses the Shade,
mm-hmm.
Because I haven't seen that much, but, you know, back in the old days, he was just more of a, ha-ha, I'm a villain, ha-ha! and here, it's just kind of like recreating him. And they even kind of explain, like, yeah, you know, it was just, those days were just a game. There we go. But he's one of the breakout characters of this, that whenever he's on page, I'm just like, the Shade's back! I'm so happy! Oh, look, he's kind of a villain. Kind of.
Yeah. I can't wait to get to the next issue so we can talk more about him, but
yes.
If we talk too much about him this issue, we'll give a lot of spoilers to the listeners.
I know, we can't get into it. But I think this issue really, you know, it just goes back to setting up that family is going to be a big theme of this at least of this opening arc.
Right. It's not only the Knight family, you know, there's the O'Dares, and even the villains have some sort of family thing going on. I find it very interesting how they would, I don't know, they would mention their familial ties on purpose, like, you know, my son or my father. It's why would you include that in conversation, like in such a dangerous situation where where, you know, that you're fighting, and suddenly somebody comes by and then they're like, oh, my father. It's just very, it just gives you a huge hint.
Yeah.
That this readers is a major plot point.
Yeah. I really like that. I like that this comic kind of, you know, it straddles that line of slightly older comic books where there's so much exposition everywhere you look, and the new comic books where it's just kind of taken for granted that after 4 issues, 5 issues, 6 issues, they're going to put them out in a trade paperback and a lot of people will read them just all together. So in this, it's not overly expositional, but it's got just enough where you can kind of read it and be like, oh right, here it goes. And sometimes it does feel, you know, like it wouldn't work as a stage play, but it's very quickly, like you said, it kind of connects those lines of here's something that's important,
right?
It feels stylized, not necessarily like overwritten, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get what you mean. And when you talk about the exposition, I'm the kind of person who looks at the words a lot more than the pictures when I read comics. Yeah. So I've noticed like how they would always use these devices to remind us of how Jack is not the star man that he thinks. Okay, I don't know whether I'm putting this right. I think he has this very idealistic version of Starman in his head because of his brother and his dad, and he keeps thinking that he is not that, you know. And the comics, the writer, he would drop these lines where Jack would be fantasizing about items that he's in stock in his secondhand store, and I love that. Like, what was it? Jadeite dinnerware and Spike comics. It's so smart.
It really is. And again, kind of, I guess we're skipping all over right now, but because of, like, no, it's great because it, when you think of, like, that, he puts a lot of his emotion into things, and things hold a lot of value with it, which, you know, later on in the comic, when it kind of brings up that when his mother's museum wing, the museum wing named after his mom, is under attack, that's like, you know, it's her items. It's items that were valuable to her. And so when you kind of put that together of he puts a lot of his power into those items and then her items, that's why it's a much more personal attack. It's not just here's a building with her name on it. It is her memory.
Right.
And that gives him that push to go back into action.
Right.
I don't know. It has so much more value that we know where his values are, in a way.
Yeah. That's a really nice way to wrap it up. To wrap that idea up. I like it.
And I don't... The whole hospital scene, that's painful to read. That's where it's his dad just kind of being like, you know, my other son wanted to be a hero, wanted to wear the silly costume, as my not-so-heroic son here called it.
Right.
Aww.
When I read that part, I don't know, I just thought that, I think his name is Theodore, right? The dad?
Ted, yeah.
Theodore. Ted was so harsh. Why did he have to say those things? But of course, I think we found out at the end why he said those things, but it was just very... You know, Starman, Ted, it was Starman. Starman's supposed to be a good guy.
Mm.
So why do you say such wicked things? That was what I was thinking.
No, I mean, it's there is that feeling of he's just being, he is lashing out, is just the kind of feeling I get from it, that, you know, he's also in pain and he's just not handling it well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or yeah, maybe he's trying to push his other son into a safe area.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the Odaes, though, they just showed up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
that was interesting. In the hospital, right? Mm. Mm-hmm.
And having the Odaes also kind of, yeah, it's another family. Families are all over, and the connections between those families.
Mm. Yeah, looking at the scenes again, and they were there when Ted lashed out at Jack.
Yeah,
that is something that I cannot imagine. Like, you know, very Asian. I'm very Asian, so I don't know. Is this
not just Asian? Very Asian. That's
yeah. I mean, very Asian because I've always grown up in Asia. I grew up in Asia. I've always been in Asia, and it's to see, why are you washing your dirty linen in public? Don't scold your son in front of outsiders. That's what I'm thinking right now. Yeah.
But I guess if there's, you know, if he knows the Odaes aren't going to get out, like, they're going to be in there watching to make sure Ted's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the only chance he has to scold, to vent, to try and protect Jack.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they are there, and it does make it kind of a bit more painful.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, like, I really like the art in this book, and even though I think I'm kind of like you, where I do kind of notice the words a bit more than mm-hmm. the art, there are times, like, I mean, of course, it's not a comic book without the art.
Mm.
Although, when I look at Hope Odaes' first appearance,
right,
in the comic with the jeans and the black spaghetti strap shirt, mm-hmm. I just feel like, oh, 90s. Like, that is the most 90s thing in this comic, is just the... She looks like... I bet you they're Guess jeans. They've gotta be.
Okay, I'm looking at them now.
It's...
Yeah, high jeans. Waist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, huge pockets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a choker and a hairband with her hair all pushed back.
Yeah, and the spaghetti strap. Somehow it all just combines to say 90s. Like, after this, she's going to the rock club.
I think it wouldn't be, like, super 90s if she kind of left the spaghetti strap out, but she tucked it in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just glad, you know, she didn't leave the flannel shirt on that she was probably...
Flannel shirt.
Which, I don't know, it's also just like a fun to kind of compare her and Jack in this one. Mm. Because for whatever reason, Tony Harris decided to go super, at the time, modern with her. And Jack is still, you know, he's... would he be a pre-hipster? I don't know.
You're talking not hipster, about his clothes, but, right?
Yeah, he's still very retro.
I know what you mean. I mean, that color combination, though.
the pink and the blue?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's an eyesore.
Oh, you know what the sad thing is? I think if I could find a shirt like that, I would totally buy it in a heartbeat.
I think it's fine to wear now because, you know, retro's back and everything, but I don't know, it just looks very ugly. the clothes. Yeah, I like his later outfit. The one with the t-shirt and the jacket.
A little Now see, this is the part where I'm not sure if my how well my comic knowledge lines up. So I may be saying something that actually didn't come true till later.
Mm-hmm.
But here Jack is wearing, like in the later one, he's wearing the pirate shirt with like the Jolly Roger.
Yeah. I like that one.
And I believe that Tony Harris, one of the studios he worked in, is well, it says here in the late 90s he formed Jolly Roger Studios in Macon, so I guess which is in Georgia, so I guess it's actually the shirt predates it, but I always wondered if, you know, if there was some kind of like pre-studio version of Jolly Roger that he was kind of putting a little Easter egg in there.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you never know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's somewhere on the internet.
Haha, internet.
Yeah. Which they probably didn't have.
Not in 90. Well, they were trying to figure out how to, monetize it.
Yeah, in November 1994. I was just looking at the phones. You know, the phone where they were interrupted by a phone call and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed the phones. It's still very 90s. It's one of the, what do you call these type of phones?
Like the rotary phones?
Yes.
Which, I mean, even in the 90s, rotary phones were pretty rare. So, mm-hmm. which kind of adds the sense of Opal City, and it's a rotary speakerphone.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh!
Because if you look at the, I'm looking at the page where they're in the hospital, and there's the fire going outside, and the phone's in there, you can see that next to the other rotor is a speaker coming out, which is, I don't know, it's just, even though it's a little phone, it looks like an Art Deco rotary phone speakerphone, which is just great, and it looks like it belongs in this world.
Right. Oh my. I only just realized, do you know, I thought that the thing attached to it, that I didn't know that it was a speaker. I thought it was some kind of tracking device that the ODS put on the phone to look for whoever was calling. Oh, it makes sense now. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, what's next?
I guess, you know, we have, after the fire scene, we have one of the first times Jack is in real combat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we had a little bit here, but here he is taking on just thugs.
Right. At the museum.
Yeah, and he's doing a pretty good little job of it until up shows up,
what's that guy's name?
Yeah, oh goodness.
Kyle?
Kyle, that's right.
Right.
The young Mist.
Yes.
Who, in one shot, takes out Jack.
Right, and Jack drops the rod. But you know what? I love it that they are giving so many problems for him. Like, it's not that smooth sailing, because the first time when I saw that those panels where he was fighting the thugs, I was like, he's too good. He's not, you know, he's this junk dealer, but suddenly he's in combat and he's kicking everybody's ass. That's kind of hard to believe for me. And then Kyle comes along and basically shoots at him and he falls into the river or something, and that kind of justifies it for me.
And you know, not so much in this issue, but another preview for next issue, they do kind of explain or slowly explain why he actually can fight. But it is like it hurts a story if the new hero is as good as the experienced villain.
Right.
And, yeah, okay. Jack is right now not as good.
Yeah. You don't want them to be invincible. You want them to be believable and imperfect.
Mm.
Yeah. That's, I think that's the, that's what a good character is in a piece like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But speaking of invincible, we got the Shade here who, he may not be invincible, but he is a force to be reckoned with.
Yep. Yeah. Is that attack in here? The one that...
Oh, yeah, right after Jack falls into it, we flash to the museum.
Oh, yes!
And, you know, I love the coloring in this series as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, you know, we've gone... we just went to the kind of dusky, fiery, outside look.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next page, already we can kind of tell it's a little bit later.
Right.
And we're inside because it went to that kind of blue hues.
Mm-hmm.
And then out comes the Shade just looking mysterious and evil.
Mm. He does. He looks like a vampire.
He kind of does, yeah. And those glasses, like, I'm still trying to figure out how much are glasses and how much are eyebrows.
Oh, his eyebrows are shaped like bats.
Yeah, they kind of are like vampire bats.
Okay.
But, and he makes the monster that just
again the monster right
bites
now.
One of the crooks in half.
Yeah, I think that he had this like really cool line. Where is it? You are right to be afraid. My boy, that one. He said,
"Yeah, you are right to be afraid too, my boy. My power isn't merely creating illusion from a shadow. I make things manifest.
Here it is. Yes,
terrors whole and hearty.
Yes, I make things manifest. Terrors whole and hearty. I like this line a lot. That is a cool power.
Hmm. Yeah, he's just such a great character who's like the fact that he's." He's a villain who's... He's a great little anti-hero in this.
Okay.
Where the fact that, like, we know he's a villain, but the only bad things he's doing are to other criminals, and he's doing it in a way to protect the city, but he also feels like, well, because I protected a little bit, I'm entitled to a taste.
Mm.
So, you know, he's bad and he's dangerous, but he hasn't done anything... in the world of the comics, it's repugnant.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's not just this story that has villains like that, but it's because of these villains that it kind of makes the story a little bit more relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what people are in real life, you know, not completely bad.
Yeah, yeah.
So... yeah, I appreciate it that he was introduced like in issue one.
Mm.
It's because the other guy, the one with the weird
splotchy skin, the mist.
yeah, the mist. He just seems like really weird and very evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but this guy balances it out.
And then I guess at the very end, we get Jack rising from the waters.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was amazing though. How did he? Like, didn't he get shot? I actually thought he got shot.
I think he did, but we'll find out for sure in issue number 2.
Issue number 2.
And you know, it's just a small thing, but I really like the fact that where we see Jack get taken down a few pages beforehand has those telephone poles up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he comes out the water, kind of going back from it, we have those same telephone poles. So it's just a nice little callback to like, yes, this is where he was at. This is what's going on. In the background, we see the city on fire. And just, you know, a great layout here.
Right. Oh, I didn't notice that. I didn't notice another thing, though, about the dialogue, the way Jack talks. Mm. It's kind of disjointed. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that?
Yeah, like, yeah.
I don't know. It's, it doesn't... I can't really... Okay, for example, the page where he is, he starts fighting at the museum, and his thoughts, you know, are, nothing matters but getting through this used body, martial training, not just the rod, keep moving, keep thinking. You know, this is just one example. It's, it's almost all his lines, he has this, he doesn't string his sentences very, very smoothly, as opposed to, like, the shade, you know, I love the way he thinks and he speaks. It's always, like, in these very pretty literary sentences. But Jack, it's always very, it's very fast. It's very, and in the moment, you know exactly what he's, it's like, there's only one thing on his mind. That's, and you immediately see what is on his mind, you know. Whereas for other people, it might be just glimpses of what they're thinking, but for Jack, it's all very plain and very easy to digest.
And also, it's the way that Robinson uses to kind of control the pacing of the scene and put you in that moment. So when it's Jack, you know he's got a lot going on. He's got to go. He's got to talk. What's next? Keep moving. I got it. All right. Blah blah blah. Whatever, Jedi dinnerware. You know, he's just kind of like, he doesn't have time to process anything. He's struggling to keep his head above water. And then when we get to the shade, you know, the shade, he's much calmer. He's much collected. He's not in a hurry. There is no moment in this where the shade ever feels like he's in danger, so he has time to just enjoy the situation, to look around him, and you know, so even though maybe there's less words on the page with Jack than on the shade, and it kind of helps you control what's happening in the scene in your own mind, And it does, like you said, it adds personality to the characters as well.
Yeah. I really like that. I think I've gotten a lot more sensitive to dialogue because I've been writing this stupid thing for about a month. And I really like how in comic books, it's mainly just dialogue driving the entire story. And it's difficult. It's difficult to just bank on dialogue. Of course, there are pictures, but if you just that's amazing. You know, it's the pictures and the words just come together so interestingly to make a really good story, a very well-rounded story, and it's really a form on its own. Shouldn't be like comic books are a wonderful literary form.
they really are. And here we just these are our two talents who are really coming together to make something special, and the way the words and the pictures line up, they just, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts here. And that it is this powerful when we're only on, well, it's issue number one, but it's the second issue of the series, just shows that they're hitting something really nice.
Right. I found this issue number one a lot more engaging than zero. So.
Yeah. It's definitely building, and I think we're gonna keep seeing that. I think we're gonna keep seeing as these relationships form, we're just going to get more and more involved. I think that's all I got to say about issue number one.
I have one last question. Would you say that a new reader, someone like me, would be okay with starting at issue number one instead of zero?
I would think, you know, I think with all that's set up in issue zero, I think it would be better to start there because we have the whole the death of Davy in issue one. We have even though Jack isn't as likable in issue one, and the series itself isn't quite as polished. I think enough important thing happens in issue zero that, and some of the characters who don't show up again until next issue, you know, here we don't even, in issue one, we don't see the mist, we don't see the sister, and so I think it would be, you know, you kind of, even though the zero issue can be a little bit denser and not quite as gripping, I think one is the place to start, and also on another realistic point of things, I think if someone is reading the series, they're probably going to be getting it in either the trade paperbacks or the Starman omnibuses, in which case they're going to have access to issue number zero.
Oh, okay.
So it'd basically kind of be like getting a book and then saying like, here's the preface, or you know, the kind of maybe not chapter one, but I'm just gonna skip that and just go right into chapter two.
Okay.
You know, would just be my thing.
I see. Okay. That was Brent's opinion, you guys. So start from zero.
Don't start at one. Start at zero.
Start at zero.
In all things.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Oh, hey, Lydia.
Uh-huh.
Before we say goodbye, where on the interwebs can they people find you?
You can find me, well, most of the time I hang out on Twitter. Now, Twitter and Facebook. You can find me at Quick Channel, which is also the name of my YouTube channel. Ding.
How do you spell Quick?
Q-U-E-K.
There you go. So Quick Channel.
Thank you, Brent. And you can also find Brent on Twitter, right, Brent?
Yeah. I have the @DeadTroubadour, which is a reference to my novel Deadly Troubadours, but that's too many letters for Twitter. I'm not good at this whole, so everything I have is like a slightly different variation, because my website is deadlytroubadour.com with no S, but my book is Deadly Troubadours with an S, and then my book, or my Twitter, is Dead Troubadour. Okay. So, and then you can, my main Facebook page is Deadly Troubadours. Yeah, so that's all the places you can find me. So, hopefully you'll find us both and enjoy it. Yay,
internet!
Bye.
Bye.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.